is Frank H.
Give it up, Frank.
I'm Frank H. I'm a recovering addict.
Hey, Frank.
Man, any more readings? somebody's heard something in my story and asked me to come share my experience, strength, and hope. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm not a guru on taking the mask off because I just started. I'm going to share my story first. Prior to coming to NA, I came from an abusive family, dysfunctional. Everybody in my family drank. I had an aunt that was a number runner. And I remember my mother leaving me with her at 6 years old. And this is basically where everything in my life took off at. I remember having a girl cousin that was like 14. And she used to abuse me. She used to hit me all the time, kick me, punch me, scratch me. Everything she could think of doing, that's what she did to me. And I remember going in the room crying, wishing my mother was there. And what ended up happening was, later on, she started sexually abusing me. And I remember at 8 years old, I took my first drink to try to fill that void of all the things that was going on in my life. And from that point on, everything just took off. By the time I was 12, I was smoking weed. By the time I was 14, I was snorting coke, dope, dropping acid. Whatever you could think of, that's what I was doing. I was hanging around dudes that was shooting dope, but only through God's grace I didn't shoot no dope. And I remember by the age of 16, my family saying I would be dead because of the lifestyle that I lived. I was very angry. I had a lot of resentments towards my mother for abandoning me. What I'm sharing with you now is a lot of anger, resentment, and shame and guilt that I brought into the fellowship with me. I got clean. I started getting clean at 23. I remember at 16 looking for a program, but they didn't have Narcotics Anonymous at that time. They had the Mother Fellowship. And what happened was, when I found out that I just had a problem, because I thought I only had a problem with alcohol, you know. And what ended up happening was I went on for another 8 years using, and my disease progressed. So by the time I was 23, I was snorting coke, smoking woodies, whatever you want to call them. And I remember sitting in my living room one day saying I want some help. Now, a couple of people had been introduced to me who were in the fellowship, but I told them I didn't have a problem. You know, I kept saying, man, I'm all right, because, see, I still had clothes and, you know, nice things, and, you know, I wasn't completely a bum yet. And I remember telling them, I'm all right, I'm, you know, all I got a problem with is, I just drink too much. You know, I was still going to the go-go's, you know, clubs and all that kind of stuff. And so snorting coke, you know, it was a weekend thing for me. Until one day when I just found myself walking up to 15th Place Southeast every day. And I remember saying, I need some help. I need some help. But I ain't nowhere to begin looking for no help. I didn't know how to look for help. But God, see, God, my God is good. What happened was, I was in a class trying to get my GED, and it was this phone number on a wall, on a bulletin board. And it was the NA hotline. And that's how I found this program. And so in October of 1986, the first time I came to a meeting, I came in the meeting and I stood in the back of the room and I heard everybody sharing, and I said, you know what? I'm all right. I don't really need to be here. I only went to meetings for 2 weeks. I ain't get no phone numbers. I ain't introduced myself to nobody. I walked out the meeting that day, and I ain't looked back. A year later, I came back. And I remember standing on the curve, and I said, if don't none of these MFs come up and hug me, fuck this program. And this lady walked up to me, and she looked at me. Now, I had on this real long coat like I was Superfly with this fur hat on and some snakeskin glasses. But that was the style, right? And she said to me, motherfucker, you're not all that. You need to walk your ass around here and get some hugs and some phone numbers. And she grabbed me by my hand and took me to different men, and they gave me their phone numbers and hugged me and told me to keep coming back. Right then and there, I knew I had found a place where I finally belonged. And when I walked away from that meeting that day, I remember walking down First Street Northeast, for those of y'all who live in D.C., crying, real tears. I couldn't stop crying because I found some hope that day. And I started coming to meetings every day. Every day I came to a meeting. But the problem I had was I had a fear of trusting people and letting people get to know me. So for a lot of years in recovery, my fears kept me from reaching out. I would come to a meeting every day, and then I had gotten a sponsor, like, I think I had like 90 days clean, you know, and I couldn't even reach out to him. I had to tell a female that I was talking to. See, I could reach out to the women. I just couldn't reach out to the dudes, you know. But this female, she introduced me to my first sponsor. And I remember following him around from meeting to meeting to meeting. And he was, you know, he would always share real good and say, I triple goddamn dare you to try this thing. And so I followed him because I wanted to see what he was doing. And so what happened was, I remember once I hooked up with him, we would go to meetings every day together. And we would sit on the front row. And I would share a lot of things with him, but I wouldn't share in the meetings. And so what he would do is, when we sat on the front row, he would nudge me and say, raise your hand. And I would look at him and say, I ain't sharing here in front of all these people. And he would say, raise your hand. And I would say, man, I'm not sharing in here in front of all these people. And so the speaker would say, anybody want to share? And he would grab my hand and put it up. And I'm sitting there going, and he would say, share. And I would like, and the speaker say, it's okay, share. And so I started sharing. I started talking about me at that point. See, God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself because of my fear of what y'all was going to think about me. I thought I was unique. I thought I was different. I thought I was better than because I didn't hit a bottom and sleep out in homeless cars and all that kind of shit. So when I started sharing, people could identify with me. And I remember, like I say, as I would go on, I still wouldn't reach out to a lot of men. You know? There were some men I felt comfortable with because the way they approached me. It's just others, man. They would just stand back and I just grit on them. Nigga, don't come near me. Don't hug me. Don't touch me. Stay away from me. And I carried that facade for a long time in recovery. And then one day I started doing some step work. And what happened was I had to reveal a lot of things about me to another human being. And when I finally broke down that barrier, that's when I found out why I was so fearful of sharing with other men. And what I found out was the fear that I had was because of the abandonment issues, the abuse that I suffered, and just not, you know, knowing how to reach out to men because all my life, for real, it wasn't no man there to say, Frank, I love you. It wasn't no man there to hug me. It wasn't no man there to guide me. Every man that ever came in and out of my mother's house would look at me, be like, a little red motherfucker. Here go a dollar, nigga, get the fuck to the store or something. You know? There wasn't no love shown to me. So I ain't know how to receive love. And so when I got here, like I said, I started, you know, doing some step work. You know, and slowly the mask started coming off. You know, I started trusting God and feeling that, you know, I could reach out, man, I could open up, and I could take some risks. And upon taking the risk, I started getting to know a lot of men. You know, I got a lot of men in my life now, but like I said in the beginning, man, it was real fearful, and I really didn't want to take that risk on getting to know guys because all I ever knew was, let's fight. I grew up in a neighborhood where you had to prove yourself, and that's what we did. Here today, I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of step work. I go to a lot of meetings. I raise my hand. I share. I reach out to the newcomers. Before, I couldn't do none of that. It was all about me, you know, living in fear for a lot of years. And, this is all new to me, man, coming to share at a convention. And I'm real nervous up here, man. So I told Marvin, I said, Marvin, a lot of people came to hear you share, man. Because I wanted to leave out, you know. Let him have the whole show. I've been doing like a lot of writing, man, and revealing myself to a lot of people. And some of the stuff, man, that I've been revealing, man, is quite, you know, I told myself I would take it to my grave. And but y'all told me I couldn't live in here like that. Excuse me. And the only way I was going to actually grow spiritually in here was to let somebody else know what I had been through, and hopefully it would help somebody. So I become accustomed to sharing what I go through on a regular basis. Walking around with that mask on was real tough for me for a lot of years because it kept me isolated. It kept me from just feeling. I wouldn't even let people get that close to me. I mean, picture being in a relationship with somebody and they trying to break through this armor wall or whatever it was I had up, and I'm telling them this is far enough. You know? That was with everybody. My own mother was the same way. When me and her started trying to bond, she would be trying to, you know, make that amends, and I'd be like, nah, man, you're going to do that shit again. You know? And I felt everybody that came in my life was going to do what she did, so I wouldn't let nobody in. But what I learned was I didn't give people a chance. You know? And I was scared to reveal me to people because fear of you judging me and saying, oh, I ain't fucking with you no way, nigga. You got a lot of issues and you crazy. You know? Because sometimes I do think I'm a little crazy, you know? But I find out that I'm human. You know, my sponsor helped me out a lot, though, because, you know, I call him up. I remember when I first met him, man, he used to make me laugh a lot, you know, and he said the reason why he would make me laugh was because I would always have this grit and this frown on my face, and he wanted to show me that it was okay to smile, you know, and I ain't really see shit funny. For real, I didn't. I mean, all I wanted to do when I came in here was stop using. I ain't really want to change because I thought I was all right, you know. Like I said, I hadn't done a lot of things that y'all had did, so I thought I was all right. Change for what? I ain't got shit to change. But when I started doing the first three steps, and they told me I had to write this inventory, that's when I realized it was some stuff that had to change. You know, because I found out that, I found out that I couldn't be committed in relationships. I didn't know how to love. I didn't know how to, you know, be a friend to people. I was very manipulative. I was real angry, you know, and I was full of resentments, and it was just some things, man, that, you know, I really, really became uncomfortable with living with. And so what happened was I prayed. I remember after I did my fourth and fifth step, I remember telling my sponsor, man, I'm not doing no sixth step. I'm not changing. This is it right here. And I proceeded to do that. And you know what happened, right? Character defects was in full bloom. And they carried me for a long time. And I refused to change them until my back was up against the wall one day and I was about to use. And I prayed, and this is when I prayed, and I said, God, help me to become willing to do some more work on myself and change my life, because I really don't want to go back to where I left off at. And that's when I became willing to start reaching out, sharing, and taking risks. Then I started doing some more step work with my sponsor, calling him every day and, you know, just revealing a lot of things about me, you know, things that I ain't really want to tell nobody about, you know, because I thought, man, that I was unique. I ain't know that other dudes did or thought the same things I did and thought. I thought I was the only one. So, you know, when my sponsor started telling me things, you know, that he was thinking and things that he wanted to do, and I was like, man, we just alike. He was like, yeah, you know. You ain't no different from nobody in here. And so I became more trusting in the process of taking off this mask. Because, I mean, I got to go back one time. I remember being at a party one time, right? And everybody in the party was drinking and standing around and doing what they was doing. And I was the only one in the party that thought that I was an addict. Yeah, until I went in the bathroom, and you know, because people had doors closed and stuff like that, and I ain't know what was going on behind the doors, right? So I went in the bathroom, and the dude was in there, you know, doing his thing. Then I said, well, what's going on in this room? And I went in this room, and they was in there smoking coke and doing this, and I was like, damn, I ain't the only one in here, huh? Because I had little, you know, package in my pocket, and I wanted to go do a toot, you know what I'm saying? And then that's when I started saying, well, damn, I'm walking around here with a mask on. I remember saying this. I'm walking around here with a mask on thinking I'm fooling some people, and it's people just like me. And that's the same thing I did in recovery. I came in here walking around with a mask on for years thinking I was fooling y'all, and y'all was just like me. And I was scared to death to take the mask off. And then most of y'all was sitting up here raising your hands, spilling y'all guts. And I'm still sick. I'm still walking around here sick for fear of taking off the mask and sharing what's going on with me. Not knowing that I was going to help somebody else and help myself mostly. You know what I'm saying? And what I got was now I'm free. I'm free. All that stuff that I held on to for so long that I thought was so valuable to me, and that if I revealed it to somebody, it was going to push them away. When I came here to y'all, y'all said, motherfucker, you ain't no different from me. You just like me. That's why God put us together. You know? So that I can reveal some stuff to another individual that'll help them get through whatever it is going on in their life. And I had cut off my blessings because I didn't want to reveal me. And I stayed stuck for years in this spot of being afraid. I stayed stuck because I didn't want to let nobody in. But today, like I said, I feel free, man. I go to meetings and I share the exact nature of what's going on with me. I don't hold no punches, you know. And some of the things that I share, sometimes, man, people be like, man, whew. And I be like, damn, I shared that? But 5 minutes. But what's really kept me here, man, is people loving me unconditionally and allowing me to be me and allowing me to come around in my own time and reveal myself and not judge me. It was people like my sponsor who really, really had a lot of patience with me and actually sat through a lot of times when I had to cry on his shoulder. And it wasn't, and I ain't feel gay. You know, because I thought only weak coward dudes cried. You know what I'm saying? Especially on another man's shoulder. Come on, man. You don't do no shit like that around there where I came from. But I had to share. And actually, I remember doing my fifth step and crying the whole time I'm doing it. And he held me. And I told him, I said, man, I feel like a bitch. Excuse me, sir. He said, ain't no need for that, man, because you getting some freedom here. You getting some freedom here. And that's what it's all about. When they say the mask must go, if you don't come in here and reveal some things about you and do some step work and take that mask off, you're going to be just like I was, standing around in pain, but refuse to let somebody help you until your back is up against the wall and you don't have no other way to turn, then you become willing. If you new in here, you don't have to live like I lived in recovery. You can come in here and start the day. And I'm not promoting NA or whatever this is. I'm just promoting my recovery, how I live and how I feel now. There's still times when I feel afraid to share. But I pray and I trust God. And I raise my hand and I share anyway. It don't matter what you think about me now. Because I got it off me. When I walk out that door, I'm all right. I can go on about my day now. I ain't got to worry about doing no bodily harm to nobody. Using. Because the stress and the frustration is off. You know, and that's only through this program, man. Because if I hadn't never came in here, I wouldn't have never been able to be the way I am now. I want to thank y'all for asking me to share. And now I can sit down.
Thanks for sharing, Frank. Our next speaker is Marvin M. Please welcome Marvin M.
Thank you. Can I lift these up? Can I raise these up since I'm taller? I won't break it. I promise you I won't. Thank you. Great. Yeah. That's it. I'm Marvin. I'm an addict. Oh, it is good to be here. Before we get going, we're in an awesome, awesome workshop. Tell yourself, my life is never going to be the same again after today.
Because I'm going to learn some stuff. Yeah. I'd like to thank the Caprichna Program Committee that put this together, asked me to come. I think my sponsee who brought me here was a little forceful in getting me up here, but that's just the way he is. That's his love for me. Truly, I thank you all for being a part of my recovery over the years. I thank the God of my understanding for keeping me a day at a time. I thank my wife in her absence who's gone on to be on a vacation since I was coming here. She said she'll go vacation with the children. I thank her for tolerating me over the years of marriage as the mask was coming off. It's an awesome thing to look back over our life, and oftentimes, I think the mass, when we get here, the mass is even necessary. We come from a lifestyle that says certain qualities, certain requirements, certain things had to be there in place in order to survive in the lifestyle that we chose to live. So I think, panically, it's necessary to have a mass when we walk in the door of Narcotics Anonymous. I've been in this program now, and not just a member of this program, but in this program living a day at a time now. I got here, it was November the 30th of 1987, and you all know the story. I mean, I tried every combination there was, and the combinations ran out. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more started running out. I used to have a combination just not to get high, but to just get started in the morning. It wasn't even about to get high at this point. It's just to get started so that now I can go and try to put another idea together. So as a result of all of that, that's why I stand here today. And you all have just been very, very instrumental with getting me to the place that I am and growing me up to the adult that I am today. But I think it's necessary that when we got here, that there was a mask that had many, many faces to it. It had, if we can think about cosmetically, if we think about women who put on makeup to prepare themselves to go out to be adorned by the date or the dater, then oftentimes she does things like this. Not drink the water, but I'm getting ready to describe what she do. Oftentimes, she puts on some eyeshadow, and I think that there's a mask for that. I think that there's a mask that says, I cannot, by no means necessary, show you who the little boy is inside of me. So I put on some eyeshadow to prevent that, and the eyeshadow is the mask of being rough and tough, and it's the external thing that says that I cannot let you see that I'm scared. So because of that, I put this mask on that I'm rough and I'm tough. Then I go and I get this mask that says, because of fear is overwhelming in my life, I have to put some rouge on my face. Because I'm about to come out into this world of some people that don't know me. And now I can't let them see that I'm scared, and I can't let them see that I'm insecure, and I can't let you see that I have locks and insufficiencies that's happening not just in my mind, but in my heart. I'm not pleased with the person that the Creator has designed, and there's nobody else on the planet like yourself. But I'm not pleased with how he designed me. I'm black. I was born in the South, and I moved to the city, and we moved in the projects, and I'm the youngest of four sons, and my daddy worked hard. He was a roofer by trade. I was embarrassed of that. And what do you think I grew up to be? A roofer by trade. But now, I have all of these things that are just now in my life. They're hovering over my life. They're not just in my mind, but they're in my heart, and I'm not feeling good about me. So now I'm introduced to this lifestyle that says only the tough can survive. I go out, I see the flashy lights, I see all of the people, I see the glow, I see the glitter, and things look good. It's a lifestyle that I'm drawn to. It's not the substance, because the substance is not the problem. I don't have the substance in my life no more, but I still have the behavior of liking the lifestyle. Now I got something else to deal with. I got another mask that I got to take off. Because what I'm finding, that the longer I stay here, it wasn't just one mask. I had multiple layers of masks. I had masks of insecurities and inadequacies and insufficiencies and lacks and defects and not feeling good about myself. And I had masks of fear and bitterness and anger and resentment. Those kinds of things that they're for real. When I started to work out and start unlayering some of the masks, I found some of this was just in my head. Now, I get here, and you all start to tell me that, Marvin, more is going to be revealed. And I said, that's real good. That sounds good. I like the ring to that. If you say it in your mind right now, it has a nice little ring to it. It says, more will be revealed. It got a nice ring, and it says, but now, because of my fear, I don't want to see no more of me. Because I'm not liking me. So to keep looking at me is not a good thing right now. And you didn't tell me that I had to deal with me. But you just kept telling me, well, if you just keep coming. And if you keep coming, Marvin, then what's going to happen is some more about you is going to be revealed. But now I'm coming and I'm coming, and you all told me some things to do. You said, make a lot of meetings and get a sponsor and get a sponsor that goes in meetings and get a sponsor that got a sponsor and work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I followed the script. And I went to this guy, and I remembered him when he was out in the street. And I went to this guy, and I did just what y'all said. I said, would you be my sponsor? Would you be my sponsor? And I was really happy because I was here, and I wanted something that you all had to offer. But now what I really wanted was for y'all to show me just how to use on the weekend. I wanted to start using at about 6 o'clock on Friday and stop at about 6 on Sunday. I didn't come here to do this the rest of my life. I just wanted that weekend thing. Remember how it started out? I wanted to go back to that. This was taking up all of my life. I couldn't do nothing else. Everything I thought about was around how I'm going to get loaded the next minute. Everything I thought had getting loaded behind it. I had a mass of manipulation, a mass of craftiness, a mass of cunningness, a mass of insidiousness. All of those masses that I wasn't even aware of that I'm still not even dealing with at this time. But I did what y'all said. I went and got a sponsor. So I go to this guy and I said, would you be my sponsor? Would you be my sponsor? And he says, yeah, well, here's what you do. You take my number and call me every day for 30 days and I think about it. I says, now he's going to give up this golden opportunity to sponsor me. Because I'm not going to nobody else now. Well, his loss. Because you got to remember, now, there's a master vanity. That even clean we don't want to deal with. So, I says, okay. Yeah, right, I'm going to call you every day for 30 days. And you think about it. That's what I'm going to do. But as I was leaving that meeting, what I do remember is that I was so broken. And that made some kind of sense to me because I remembered the prayer. It was no longer a Monty Hall kind of prayer to the God of my understanding anymore. I had stopped praying for deals. I had stopped praying that if you get me off of this one, I'm never going to get that high again. I had stopped all of that. It was at that final place that I said, if you be real and you want me, now is the time. And I mean right there at that very time, I started this road to recovery. I called this guy every day for 30 days. And for about 20 out of 30 days, he wouldn't call me back. But there was something in me that wouldn't stop. And I had a hunger to want to live because I saw the power of the God of his understanding working in his life. Because I remember when he was getting loaded, and I says, now, if he could go from the person I knew to who I'm now seeing, then this is real. And not only was it real from that perspective, but it was real because you all had embraced me with love. And I had felt something that not even my parents could give me. And it was a genuine love that no matter how many layers of a mask that I had, that I hid behind, you all still love me anyway. Thank you, Frank. Oh. And you all still love me. And I began to get with this guy, and when I came along, and when Frank came along back in 1987, we used to say those were some good golden days. And when we came along, you had things, sponsors would just take control. They tell you what to do. It wasn't a suggested program. It was a program that this is what you do. And this is what we had to do. He says, get to the meeting 15 minutes before it starts. Go use the bathroom, because back then we could smoke in the meetings. Go use the bathroom, get your cup of coffee, get you two cups of coffee if you think you're going to drink that much. Get on the front row and don't move. The secretary's report wasn't a station break. It wasn't an intermission. You didn't walk out. You sat down on that front row, and you didn't move until we got in the circle and closed out. And now he was one of them kind of sponsors that says, every month, you're going to work a step. And what happened was, in the first step, I started to see the mess that I had made with such a precious gift called life. Not only did I see the mess that I made with my life, I saw the mess that I made out of some people's lives that genuinely loved me. How I started to hurt them. And I started seeing that in the first step. I started to see the powerlessness of life for me. I started to see the unmanageability of my thinking. I started to see the unmanageability of the things that I was doing. And now I'm in this first step. And now I'm dealing with this. And now I can't play the blame game no more, because the only person that I'm seeing is Marvin. Everywhere in this writing that I was, there I was. And I couldn't blame nobody else no more. I couldn't blame the fact that I was black. I couldn't blame the fact that I was fat. I couldn't blame the fact that I was poor. I lived in the projects. I couldn't blame none of that. That is what it is now, deal. And I'm seeing this in the first step, and I'm seeing the unmanageability of my life, and I'm seeing how my thinking, my decision-making is broke. I have compromised my decision-making skills, and the things that I was working with, that the perception of what I saw life to be in my unmanageability and my decisions is starting to be a little warped. And now the things that were being reality to me wasn't making sense to people that wasn't living like I was living. Man, and I'm stuck with me? This is what I got? Well, I didn't think now that I need to start taking off more masses. Now I'm saying I need to put some more on. Because now I ain't believing that dreams come true. I ain't believing more is going to be revealed. I'm not believing it's going to work for me. I'm believing now you're going to get to know who I am. And I'm scared. So he says, we can't stop here, because if we stopped here, we robbed ourselves. If all we do is find out who we are and the unmanageability of our life and the powerlessness of our life, we just robbed ourselves. We can't keep walking around saying, well, you know, I'm an addict and I'm powerless. It don't work no more. My behavior isn't justified because I'm an addict. My behavior isn't justified because I'm powerless. But now, he says we got to go to the second step. Now, the second step talks about coming to believe. And he says, now, Marvin, this is where some action has got to happen. Now, this is the step where communication is just really, really great. Is now we move into a realm of coming to the program and coming to meetings and being in the cliques and the clocks and the who's who's of the fellowships. Now we move from that realm to coming into a realm of finding this God of our understanding. It's no longer the chair anymore. It's no longer the doorknob. It's no longer the sponsor. But now this God has to be real to us. Because there's some things that's happening in my life because of the masses that I got on that nobody but nobody can do it but God. I can't stop my unmanageability. Nobody can do that but God. So, we get to the second step, and I'm coming to believe, and I'm starting to see some things that started to change in my life, and I'm starting to see some stuff. And in this second step, what started to happen was a development of communication with the Creator, the God of my understanding, because he's no longer the chair, it's not the doorknob, it's not the sponsor, it's not the woman, it's not a relationship, it's not the money, because I still didn't have none, I spent it all right, so I don't have no money, so it ain't the money, it ain't the car, it ain't the house, I didn't have a house, I was back home with my parents, I didn't have a car, me and James was laughing about that today, we put thousands upon thousands of miles on my mama's car, I didn't even have a car when I got here, I had used that up. That was so bad, it wasn't even worth going to the junkyard. You remember that, Sherman? We was trying to take the car, because at that time, you'd get $75 if you turned in a used, abandoned car. They wouldn't even give us the $75 to go car. You remember that? So it's not about these things now. What's starting to happen now is that I got to get this relationship with the God of my understanding. And now I got to get into a place of communication. And now what the second step starts to talk about, the second step is the step that takes us to a place of prayer. Now we're down, when we get to the second step, we're down on our knees in a place of prayer. We're in a place of prayer saying that now I see the insanity and the insidiousness of my life and I can't change it because if I was able to change it, I wouldn't have got this far. So now I need relationship with you who's the God of my understanding. And in this relationship, I need you to do some things because you are God, you deal in eternity. Because I am man that you created. I deal in time. I need you now. I can't wait. I don't want to sit here for 5 years waiting to work a step. I made the decision when I got here. I want to do this. Y'all had already told me I won't have success getting high 6 o'clock Friday and stopping 6 o'clock on Sunday. It's not going to work. So now I'm saying I need a right now move from you. I can't wait. So now I'm developing a relationship with the God of my understanding because I'm seeing the insanity of my life and I'm coming to believe because I got a sponsor that I saw from back in his day and I'm seeing that this God of his understanding is doing some things for him. Not only is it working for him, but it's working for y'all. We're not talking out the side of our necks anymore. And we're not being hip, slick, and cool anymore. And we're coming and we're trying to get better. And we're going to step meetings and not sitting around in open discussions being the gurus of Narcotics Anonymous checking everybody that's sharing. That's another mess you got to deal with. So, I'm getting this relationship in, and how I'm getting it is that I'm getting into a life of prayer. And I'm telling him some things that don't feel good. And I'm saying, but I believe I can get to this place of some degree of sanity. I don't have to keep doing the same things over and over and expecting a different result. I'm starting to be able to learn from the things that I've done. And I get to this third step, and this third step talks about turning a wheel over. And the second step I learned that it's a step of communication with a prayer life. And the third step I'm learning that now this program becomes practicality. I have to now get up off my knees of prayer and start walking what I'm hearing in the prayer life. I have to get up off my knees of prayer and I have to start reading this basic text and I start walking in what they talked about. What the predecessors have already laid before us, the teachers that have been here that have started to set up the program that says we do recover. Now I'm off my knees and I'm in the third step because I'm walking in practicality and I'm not just talking rhetoric, I'm not just talking to sound good, but I'm about my business now. I'm about doing something in this program now. I'm about letting this program live in my life and it start working me and not I work it, because if I work it, it ain't going to get done. But because of the power of the spiritual principles, it start working me when I start introducing me to it. It start taking over my life and start working me and start taking some of the masses and bringing some of the masses off. And in this searching and fearless moral inventory, I start seeing this person that says, this we don't need no more, because now spiritual principles has taken over and fear starts moving because faith start leaning on me now. And now I'm moving in a level of faith that says I can get better. Yeah, I'm not that sick person I was when I got here in 1987. I'm not thinking those same thoughts I used to think. I'm not doing all of the same stuff I used to do. But in order to remove the mask, I got to get into the spiritual principles of this program. And don't get me wrong, it's all right to come to the Friday night dances. We had a good time bonding and fellowshipping, and we would lead the dances back at home, and we all go and eat, and those that drank coffee, we just drank coffee till the sun rose the next morning. It's all right, but that does not equal the quality of life that the spiritual principles of this program affords us. Now, how do I get this mask that I'm seeing that I'm just not liking about me? I got this mass of fear and shyness, and how do I break through that, and how do I get better from that, and how do I do it is that I start getting into the spiritual principles of this program. I start getting into the steps of this program, and I not just start working the steps, but I start applying the steps and living the steps, and through my living of the steps, I get better. And I'm starting to see the rewards of it. And the theme was saying, dreams do come true. And out of that, out of the dreams that we have from the applying spiritual principles of this program into our life, yeah, you know what the blessings are? Is that we reach a place of a quality of life. And the 11 steps begin to talk about that. The longer we stay and apply spiritual principles in our life, using don't make any sense. We got this thing that we say all the time. Yeah, well, you know, he went back out and he had all of this time. And he just stopped going to meetings. Well, he did a little bit more than that. He stopped applying spiritual principles in his life. It's a little more. If you think the chemistry is just coming here and not having the spiritual connection bounce off of you and you and you and hit me, and that same spiritual fire in a room of addicts not using and getting loaded a day at a time, if you think that all it's about is coming in here in a room together, our egos, our vanity, our pride would not allow it if it didn't have spiritual principles working when we got here. Now, because there's spiritual principles in place, there are some masses that's going to fall off because the two can't hang out. the two not going to hang out together. So spiritual principles is going to start dropping some stuff off, and you ain't going to know the day that it happened. You won't be able to recall the time that it happened. You won't recall the month it happened. You won't recall the year it happened. You're just going to look up one day, and you're going to say, do you know I ain't even cursing no more? Because the two can't hang out. Spiritual principles is going to take control of any room it walks in. There are going to be some masses that's going to fall off our life because we're going to apply these spiritual principles in our life. The 11th step says we keep sorting through prayer and meditation. It says you got to have a relationship with a prayer life. You got to have a relationship with those things that you meditate on. You ought to read this literature, and this literature ought to not just get in your head, because in your head you forget some stuff, but it gets in your heart, and when it gets in your heart, it's spontaneous. And in the things that are in your heart, you just do it off automatic pilot. But if it's in your head, you got to plot and plan it. Am I done? Okay. Now the 12th step says, having had. You can't deal with this one until you've had. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm paraphrasing. If I miss the word, don't judge me about it. But it says now, when we practice these principles in all our affairs, we receive a quality of life unlike anything we could have fathomed when we got here. Because if you ask me what I expected out of this, I sold myself short. It is beyond my wildest imagination. That's how good life has opened itself up to me. Don't get me wrong. In 13 years, I was 13 years into this program, and I'm talking about not just working this program, but living this program. 13 years in it. I'm married with children. Got four girls, 13 years in the program. Had a business that I just knew on paper we were going to do exceptionally well. You know how you plan and you don't take your plan to the God of your understanding? And you just start working and you just start doing what you think is the thing to do, and he's saying, well, I don't know what you're working with. I ain't there right now in your life. That ain't what I have for you right now. But 13 years in this program, and I got a business, and I'm thinking, that things are going well, and all is well, and I look up, and the business crashed, because what I did not have is the business management skills that was needed. You know, we jump out there saying, oh, yeah, I can do it. I'm clean now. Nothing can bother me now. Well, you need more information, Marvin. I started this business and it's doing well on a small scale, and then I get into a scale of an arena that I know nothing about. But I didn't even study to learn about it. I just know that I know, because that mass of vanity says, it is me. I can do this thing. I lose the business, and in that same year, not just losing the business, lose two houses. I look up and I'm homeless. 13 years. But do you know, if you live by the spiritual principles of this program, we had more offers to come. Now I'm talking about a wife and a family. We had more offers to come and stay with people. It wasn't enough of us to receive all of the offers. So you know what I did? Because I had done some things to my parents, and we took the offer that my parents extended to us, and we went back to my parents' house, and a lot of y'all in the room know where it was. So we went back to my parents' house, and James, believe this, I went right back to my same little old room. But now this time I'm going to my little room at my parents' house with a whole family. Go figure. But we do this, and I stay on the course, and I stay focused, and I stay on the course, and I'm looking at things, and I'm going back to the first step, and I'm saying, where was the unmanageability? and I find it in it, and I'm working there, and I'm looking at the unmanageability of my life, and I go back to the second step, and I says, now I got to go back and strengthen this relationship that I have with the God of my understanding. And in the third step, I got to get up and I got to do something. And in 6 months, we were telling my parents, thank you, we love you, but we just got another house. Now, that's just a small thing for what this program opens up the opportunities to. The big thing is this, and I'm closing. It opens up the opportunity for you to find you. Never mind the house. Never mind the cars, the money, none of that. It's all a temporary fix. What it opens up is a door to meet you standing on the other side. I'd like to thank the Chesapeake Potomac Regional Convention for asking me to come. Thank y'all for being in my life. Give it up for yourselves.